everyone. Welcome back to the Meal Mentor Podcast. This is episode 7 in season 2. I'm really excited. We're really cranking this year. And today's guest is just fabulous and a great member. And I can't wait to have her and talk to you and bring her around. And it's going to be a fun day. So I hope you're ready. And of course, this is brought to you by getmealplans.com. And we'll be talking about the meal plans a lot today. So definitely check it out. And without further ado, let me introduce Patricia. Hey, Patricia.
Hi, Lindsay. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. Are you great?
Yes, I am. It's very exciting to be here.
Oh, I'm so excited to have you. And one thing is, of course, you have your own personal story, but you have a PhD in biology and you concentrate in toxicology. And I think you're working with cancer right now, too.
I am. Not in research, but in helping individuals diagnosed with blood cancer in particular.
Which is incredible work that you're doing. And I'm so excited to talk to you about that. And I know you're doing a really cool Jumpstart Health thing pilot program in your office. And
yes.
I can't wait to talk about that too. But first, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? I know you've been plant-based for a while, but maybe you can tell us what made you go plant-based, how long, kind of some of the things that have happened along the way.
Okay. So it was about, I've always been kind of off and on vegetarian, you know, eating meat, not eating meat. Not really enjoying meat, but, and then also I had some stomach issues. Like I never really felt good after I ate anything. And I just thought that that was, you know, normal human life. And then I just happened to be driving home from Houston and I heard Dr. Joel Fuhrman on the radio and me and my husband were listening to him and we're like, what is he talking about?
Especially in Texas. I love that you're hearing this in Houston.
Yes, because, you know, everything's about meat here. You know, meat is, you know, your main dish. And then, oh, vegetables, that's just, you know, a garnish on the side.
Well, I thought the side of meat was meat.
Yeah, the side of meat. I'll have chicken fried steak and alongside my steak and, and another steak. So, yeah, so we listened to him and we were just so fascinated by what he was saying. And he had just come out with a book, his Eat to Live book. And we actually pulled off and went to a Barnes & Noble and bought his book.
And oh, wow.
I read it in 2 days and it changed my life. I felt like I had just discovered there was no Santa Claus.
I felt that way too. I love that you're using that analogy.
It's like everything that you ever thought was healthy was not. And the way that I thought healthy eating was supposed to be was not that way. And pretty quickly after that, we just started changing everything that we did in terms of eating. And I have to say, it's been a journey. It wasn't overnight. I didn't do everything cold turkey because I don't think I really understood it all. So it was, you know, there's lots of facts and things that you have to look out for. And so I guess, you know, 5 years here I am and I can say I'm pretty well 100% pure. Yeah, I do cheat every now and then. You know, I'll have a tortilla chip or I bite my daughter's ice cream. I have a bite of it every now and then. But, you know, I never get satisfaction out of it when I do it. So it's become less and less and less. Mm-hmm. So here I am. And I feel so much better. And my husband is part of it, too. He's not a full 100%, but he's pretty, I'd say he's 95%.
That's fantastic.
So that's my little bit of my story.
Because you have this PhD, which, you know, is a lot of education in biology, when you were learning about everything and reading Eat to Live and then your subsequent study, I mean, how did that go through your mind having a background in biology? Because I really didn't have a strong science background. I mean, I took some classes in college, but nothing like to your degree with such a profound understanding of biology. Did that help you seek out more information? Like what kind of effect did that have on your, you know, your educated mind?
What I loved about Joel Fuhrman is he's all about facts and data. And that is what turned me on because I'm a research scientist in training. I collect data before I make any kind of decisions. So, you know, this, hearing all the stuff on television, you never get any facts. You never get any information. It's just opinions. And then Joel Fuhrman presents all of this data. And then from Joel Fuhrman, I went to the China study. Mm-hmm. And that was even better. So that was all very right up my alley because it gave me numbers and research studies, and I could actually go to the actual research study and read the research study, because that's what I did a lot of, reading research studies and then pulling out information and then using that to set up like food consumption guidelines for fish, and then ingestion rates for, believe it or not, soil for kids. Mm-hmm. Sounds weird, but kids do eat dirt. And so if there's a waste site, or if there's a potential for contaminated soil, you have to know what's in the soil, and then you have to determine whether or not it's a safe area for kids because they do ingest. So anyway.
That's fascinating. See, I had no idea like that whole part of the world even existed.
Yeah, I did several Air Force bases. One of them was Travis Air Force Base up in the San Francisco area. And, you know, we did sampling there and determined whether or not that was a safe environment. And for the most part, looked at cancer carcinogens and whether or not exposure to water or soil would pose a risk to cancer for kids and adults. And then we also looked at the effects on wildlife as well. So if they ingest any of that soil. So anyway, to make a long story longer, it was really the data part that, and then I had that training in the analysis of data. Those two came together for me. And that's what I love about this whole thing. It's very simple. It's just eat plants.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no all this other thing. You gotta eat some of this, and you gotta eat this many calories, and you have to do this, and you have to twirl around, and you have to
hop backwards only on every other Friday.
Yeah. That's why this whole way of life has called out to me, and I relate to it because I feel like it's based on solid science, and that's how we should make our decisions.
Right. Absolutely. And I mean, I was overwhelmed by how much, like you said, data, how many studies, like if you open up any of the books, if you open up, like you said, the China study, or even, you know, Dr. Greger's new book, and you go to the back of the book, there's just page after page after page of this teeny tiny print, but there's just pages of them referencing hundreds of studies.
I know.
There's just a wealth of supportive data out there. And even for someone like myself, who's not nearly as educated as you are, I can at least look at the volume and go, wow. So I'm always curious when someone is trained and really is into the data like you are, you know, you data nerds, you're so cute, how you respond to it. So it makes me happy to hear that was such a inspiring and propelling issue for you and side that really agreed with you.
And you know what, through all of this, I just read a statement. I can't remember which book it was because I've been reading. I read so much. I think it was in the Proteinaholic book, but I'm not sure, by Dr. Garth Davis. Somebody said there are no studies that pronounce how healthy meat is. Like, you don't see study after study coming out saying, hey, lamb is really good for you. You should eat, you know, a pound of lamb a day, or you should eat a side of beef. If you really look at the data, it's all about nutrients in vegetables and plants, and the bad things that come out are all about the animal products. So
that's a really great point. I hadn't realized that.
Just common sense, just looking at the split between the data, you got the good stuff about the plants, you got the bad stuff about the animal products. So, you know, unless somebody can find a study that's not funded by the beef industry that says, you know, eat a hamburger a day and you are going to live a long, healthy life. They really can't say that now, can they?
Mm. I'm really glad you brought that up, because that was something when I was writing The Happy River Guide to Plant-Based Living, and I was finding studies and things to back up the statements I was making, I stumbled upon this article, and I can't even remember who put it out, but it was, I think, a university that basically showed you how a lay person, such as myself, could know if they could trust a study. Because, you know, any of us can turn on the news or open a magazine and it's like a ping pong effect. One day oranges are great, the next day oranges are not. And then, you know, and if you don't have the education, you can get really lost and overwhelmed and confused. But more importantly, as you said, a lot of times they just report the findings of these studies on the news or in the magazine or something. And they don't say, hey, by the way, this study was started, paid for, brought to you by the Beef Council.
Mm-hmm.
And so do you have advice for people how they can, you know, read a study or how they can know if they can trust what they're reading or uncover these biases, maybe the better question?
I mean, I think the best thing is to get the original reference that people are using. I think because the news doesn't tell you where they get that from, and to do a little bit of research and find out what study is exactly are they referencing, and then read that and just see where the bias could be. You know, if it's funded by, look who it's funded by, look who it's written by, what institute is it written by? And is it an actual scientist as opposed to some guy that's sitting in his office making stuff up? Because that happens all the time where people will write opinion pieces. They'll take little bits of pieces of data from the news and they'll put together an article and then they shoot that out there. And it may be kind of sexy, so the news picks it up. And
Because the news is entertainment. We often forget that they are an entertainer.
And it is their opinions now. It's not even, like, if you listen, they don't even say facts anymore.
That's true.
They talk about their opinions. And I think, this is much different than, you know, you really can't trust what you hear on TV. You're right. It is entertainment. They're trying to get viewership.
Viewership, they're trying to get you to tune in to buy their newspaper, et cetera. And they sensationalize everything. I mean, we see it with various community things, but they do it with these stories because they're trying to get your attention. And one thing I do a lot of times is I'll often Google the names on the article. Sometimes it's because I just want to find out if they're doctors or if they're scientists or researchers, if they're at a university, you know, if they're employed there. And the amount of times I find that they are paid working for on the board of, you know, one of these big agricultures, I'm like, they should have to disclose that.
You know, that just correct. Absolutely Google, because you can find anything on Google. Google has everything. But I was just reading an article today about the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, and they just sued the government for the recommendations they just came out with about cholesterol. And they found out, they're saying that all of that, those results were funded by like the Egg Institute or the egg industry. And all the studies that they were doing were all funded by the egg industry. And so their conclusions were in favor of the egg industry, saying that cholesterol may not be so bad after all. And I don't know whether you happen to catch that. It was actually on Facebook this morning, and I kind of read through that. And, you know, Neil Bernard is the founder of that institute. And it's so great that we actually have a Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine that will be the watchdog for us. And so those things don't get distorted, because then they started saying, well, you can have cholesterol in your diet because it's not so bad anymore. And that's the wrong message. And it was based on, just like you said, on people that had definitely a bias and had a vested interest in making sure that the results came out to say that.
I love PCRM. I'm glad you brought them up. So PCRM is the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. And the founder, as you said, Neil Bernard, is an incredible person. And I can't remember the year. I think it was in the like earlier 2000s where PCRM sued against, they do this, they sued the government over the old food pyramid, back when it was a pyramid, you know, maybe three or four or five versions ago. And there was a big, huge lawsuit. It went on for quite some time, but long story short, PCRM won. And what was uncovered was that something like 6 out of 8 or 7 out of 10, something ridiculous, of the people who designed the food pyramid had major ties, like to the point where they were CEOs and boardmen of meat, dairy, and eggs. And these blatant conflicts of interest had never been disclosed or put out before until PCRM brought that lawsuit.
That is just amazing to me.
Yeah, I knew you'd appreciate that. But and when you were talking about the Facebook story, which I also saw myself this morning, I was like, deja vu? Deja vu. And I was reading something else too. There's just been so much chatter about these new recommendations. Like they're adding sugar now. And I'm just like, I can't even. I can't.
I know. It drives me crazy. Sometimes I just have to put it down and think, okay, if we can just get back to the basics, take out all that garbage and just eat plants.
Right. Yes, exactly. Like you said, that's the beauty of it being so simple. So it's like just eat plants. Very simple. But yeah, no, it is. And the conflicts are really hard. And I mean, like you said, you do have to do some digging. But the best thing you can do, too, is just listen to yourself. Try it out. See how you feel. And every time I talk to people, whether it's on the podcast or even in the group forums, all that, people are just like, this is what's working. I feel great. So I'm just going to trust my body.
And what I love about it is that those people on your discussion groups, which I just love.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that.
Oh, I love being, I just joined in November and I just love being part of it. It is something I look forward to every day, you know, reading everybody's comments and everybody's journeys, which are all different.
Oh, I know. It's amazing to see so much variety and that so many different approaches can lead you to the same happy place.
And then everybody has the same results. That is what is amazing, is that everybody has the same results where they feel better when they eat this way, as opposed to people that are on those other freakish diets that, you know, they're sick, they have no energy, they don't feel well, you know, they lose their appetite, or they eat too much, they binge, they always gain the weight back every time. And that's not what you find with this at all, this way of eating, this way of living. You don't find that. People do go off the, you know, they go off the truck, but they come back on because they come back on because they felt so good while they were on it. And that's what's amazing. It's not the opposite. You know, you go away from a diet because it doesn't make you feel good. Everybody knows that this way of eating makes them feel good.
Absolutely. And it's that affirmation of, and really, let's break it down. I mean, no one became unhealthy from too many fruits and vegetables. I mean, let's just be real. There's no, you know, I ended up looking because it was bothering me. I had to know the specifics of that lawsuit I mentioned. And so it was in 2000. So it was actually a lot longer ago than I had thought. I thought it was like maybe 2008, but it was in 2000 that PCRM won a lawsuit against the USDA for unfairly promoting the special interests of the meat and dairy industries through its official dietary guidelines, known then as the Food Guide Pyramid. It was revealed that 6 of the 11 members of the USDA committee assigned to create the guidelines had financial ties to meat, dairy, and egg industries. Prior to this lawsuit, the USDA had refused to disclose such blatant conflicts of interest.
Oh my goodness.
Isn't that like, it's disgusting, honestly. It's disgusting.
It is disgusting. Why? Oh, what am I asking why for?
Yeah.
That's silly. It's all about money. Really? It is. That's sad.
It is. And when I was a lawyer, one of the things that I learned in corporate law, for example, is a lot of times they'll just do like a cost benefit analysis and be like, well, we aren't going to do a recall if X doesn't equal this amount of money. It's like, wait, so even if, you know, people are going to die, you're not doing a recall because it's cheaper to pay out those families than do the recall. Okay, I can't even, like, this is gross. Clearly, now we know why I'm in a different field.
Yes, me too. That's why I don't work for the USDA.
So leaving my skeezy past employment, let's go to your positive one, which, well, I guess it's you're protecting children from dirt, so yay. But so in seeing all of the effects of toxic substances, not just, you know, food ones, but just in environmental toxins, like how does that connect with you from the whole eating food to protect ourselves? Because you hear that all the time. And again, maybe it's poo-poo caca marketing, but you hear like if you eat these things, it's antioxidants to help protect you against all these toxic things flying around the air. Since you have the PhD, you tell me.
Well, I have to say that I'm probably almost all organic now, you know, because I know what we put on crops and mm-hmm. the ground, and I know what goes into the waterways. And you know, some of it is just overwhelming. Sometimes you know too much. And,
yeah.
It could make me just shrink down and not put anything in my body at all.
Right. Yeah. It really scares you. Like, I'm not touching anything.
I know. Get all food away from me. So I try to, you know, just to know that I think, you know, using organic products is probably the best protection you can, you know, when you're buying your food, because, you know, even though somebody is eating healthy, which I think eating, you know, fruits and vegetables, if you can't afford organic, that's fine, because I think that overrides the animal products. But if you could go one step further and do the organic whenever you can, and there are like a list of the top foods that you should buy organic. And
right, then the dirty dozen, foods. Right?
Yeah, yeah. And then I think there are foods that you shouldn't. And then, you know, the non-GMO thing is really, really important, because when a product is genetically modified, it's more resistant. So they can apply fertilizers and pesticides to those products while they are growing, as opposed to if they're not a GMO type of product, they apply those pesticides prior to the emergence of the plant.
Interesting.
I just finished doing a little bit of research on that because I was confused about the GMO issue, and mm-hmm. that convinced me then it's better to buy actually non-GMO than organic, if you believe it or not, because the GMO will have more pesticides on them than the organic, than the benefits of the organic. So if you can't do organic, then at least do non-GMO. So that's kind of, so it's, toxic substances are in our environment. There's no way of getting around them, but you can modify and minimize your exposure as much as possible. And really, getting rid of animal products is a big deal, because there's lots of chemicals in the meat and dairy products, as we all know. So it's the fresh fruits and fruits that you really want to kind of focus on and try to really go for the organic piece. So yeah, I know too much, I think, regarding toxic substances, but you know, and I know there are some guidance that says maybe fish, you can use fish occasionally, and you know, fish, it's just questionable, and there's a lot of things that you have to look at when you're eating fish, where it comes from, how it was farmed, and what kind of fish it is, and whether it's a deep water fish or, you know, it's a bottom feeder, and all those things. So anyway, I don't know if I answered your question.
No, it didn't. And I just wanted to clarify. So in an ideal situation, you would want organic non-GMO. But if yes. you can't get the organic non-GMO, non-GMO is over organic.
If you can't get the organic.
If you can't get the organic. Okay.
Yeah. Non-GMO. It's going to have, the organic's not going to have any toxic substances, apparently. But we know that there's some.
I get it. So it's ideally organic, non-GMO. If that's not an option, organic. And if that's not an option, you're stuck with conventional, non-GMO. Conventional yeah. is better than conventional. Got it. Good.
Got it.
Okay. I need that's a flow chart, but I think I get it now. Yeah, no. But of course, you know, eat the best plants you can afford. Like you said, yeah. it's better to eat plants than to eat animal products. And I'm glad you brought up all the chemicals in animal products, because a lot of times with animal products, people think, oh, well, as long as I just don't get the one that has hormones. But I don't think they quite appreciate how much chemical is involved in the farm, around the animals, in the things that they have to do, because it's just like a big poop area. And also, too, that we forget that the animals have to eat, and yeah. they're often fed the most, you know, pesticide-covered, manipulated GMO yeah. crops ever. And you are what you eat and whatever it ate. So I thought Absolutely. Maybe you could touch on that as well.
Yeah, I mean, it biomagnifies. So that means that, you know, you start out with your grass or whatever that the, if the animal's grass fed, that's fine, but realize that, you know, they spread stuff on the grass as well, which they never talk about when they mm-hmm. talk about grass fed beef, but also all their grains. So, you know, their grains are all subsidized by the government, and you know, they're doing the cheapest, most efficient, most effective ways of growing that corn, and that corn has all been modified, and then it accumulates in the cow. And then you're eating all of that as well. When you consume your beef, you're eating whatever that cow has eaten.
And who knows what kind of like soil they're walking around on and what kind of water they're given.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and the water. Yeah. So it magnifies. So their food, their soil, and then all the antibiotics they're given as well, which that helps, that affects our resistance and immunity. So it's not even just the fat and the cholesterol that you
right, eat. Right, right, right.
You're eating everything. You're eating the world when you're eating, you know, the beef. You're taking its whole history. You're eating that animal's life history, basically. when you sit down.
That's really true. It's kind of like, I remember when I was in high school in sex ed class, you're like, whoever you sleep with whoever they slept with, and they slept with, and they slept with. Kind of like that.
That is exactly right. You have everybody's history. And so it's not just about eating that steak on the plate. It really is so much, it's so much more. And, you know, so why don't we have a commercial? That's what I keep asking myself. Why can't we all like do a fundraiser online to collect money to do a national commercial that, you know, Dr. Colin Campbell or Esselstyn or all those great geniuses can put together and start promoting that on the TV, since that's where people are getting all their information.
That's a really good idea. I'm actually, you know, I'm really inspired. I think I might email them when we get off the podcast and be like, guys, what can we do? Let's like get a Super Bowl commercial going.
I think, I mean, wouldn't that be one? Because I see all these milk commercials. I'm like, wait a minute, we can do this.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, we could do a grassroots fundraiser and get, you know, I don't know. I don't even know how much a national commercial would be.
I don't either. I'm sure it's a lot, but I'm sure we could do it.
So I was going to play the Powerball because I thought, well, if I win that $50 million, I'm doing a commercial.
I know. When I woke up this morning and my husband told me the Powerball was like, I don't know, 400 or 700 or something. I'm like, let's buy like a couple of tickets, even though we're not gamblers, because I have so many ways in which I would use that money. And I don't mean on shoes.
I don't even care about that stuff. I would just, I'm intent on this commercial thing because
right? I know I love it. Yeah.
Anyway, so.
I think if we all pooled our fan bases together and like if every person on every one of our newsletters like kicked in a dollar, I bet we could do it.
I think we could. I mean, they have those, what are they called? Those fundraising pages that people put out to.
Oh, like a Kickstarter. Yeah.
Yeah. Kickstarter. That's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, totally. It'd be amazing. And I'm sure a lot of like the like Almond Breeze and I bet all of them would help too.
And like, I'm sure we have some celebrities that are, you know, plant-based. How about Jim, the guy in that did Titanic?
Oh, James Cameron.
Yeah, James Cameron.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's very passionate.
So I wonder if he would help us with getting a commercial. I mean, there's lots of Hollywood contacts that I think we could.
Yeah, work. I like this. This is a good idea.
Okay. I'm always good with ideas.
Yeah. And I live in Hollywood, so maybe I'll have to put some feelers out. That's a really good idea.
There you go. So, all right. So we'll put that in. That's one of the job tasks that we have to get done in the next year.
Important for 2016 goals, life goals, yes. 2016 goals. And speaking of good ideas and goals, I know that recently, because it's the new year, you launched a Jumpstart for Health pilot program in your office. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, okay. So it starts on Monday.
Ooh.
So I know. I'm very excited. Well, I everybody knows that, you know, I'm the freakish eater in the office. But, you know, they all watch me and they're always asking me, what are you making? That smells good. That looks good. And so after watching Plant Pure Nation and they did that Jumpstart for those people in the church, but well, why can't I do something like that in my office? So I sent around an email, and I'm the boss. So I kind of was reluctant to do it, but I said, listen, this is completely not work related. I'm just throwing it out there to everybody. This is what I'm going to do for you. It'll be 2 weeks in January. I will supply every lunch and dinner meal for 10 work days. You're on your own for that middle weekend. And you're going to do blood work up beforehand and blood work up after. And all you need to do is keep a little food diary just so that we can track what you're eating before, during, and after. And then give me some containers so I can put all your food in. And so basically I have 5 people. That's pretty good. Out of 22.
That's a lot. That's what, over a fourth basically.
I know. So they've signed up and we start on Monday. And basically the first day we're going to do lunch together. And I'm going to give an hour lecture. And this is where I'm going to ask you for some input. And
yeah.
I'm gonna do an hour lecture kind of like everything I know dumped into 1 hour to try to help them. And then, you know, I'm going to give them all their meals every day, their lunch and their dinner, and for the next 2 weeks. And lots of your meals are right in there on that, in that menu. Cause that really, really helped me a lot. Cause your meals are so quick and delicious and I can make them quickly. So this weekend is going to be,
you're going to have like the ultimate batch cooking weekend.
I am having, that's why I watched your batch cooking episode. help me too.
We're having one again too, I think tomorrow. So you'll have to.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, a live one.
Maybe I'll do it while I'm cooking.
Yeah. You'll inspire me. I'll inspire you. We'll have a love fest. But you are seriously going to be like, it's the batch cooking Olympics. I'm so impressed.
Let's see. I got 5 people, 2 meals a day. So it's 10. So it's 50 meals.
Oh.
I have to make just this week, and then I have to make another 50 the next week.
Holy cow. You are amazing.
So I'm excited. They're excited. There's every walk of life that have signed up. So there's somebody who runs marathons. She's very healthy. She's a vegetarian, but she's not a vegan. And I hate those terms too, because I think they're too classified. But she's not plant-based. She still eats cheese, and she does eat some, and then oil, of course. Everybody eats oil. They don't even understand. That's one thing that's a big it's very confusing for people. So anyway, and then I have somebody who's, you know, a couple of people that are overweight, don't exercise, have lots of health issues, and I'm so excited for them. And one of them has already read Eat to Live. And
oh, wow.
And she can't believe what she read. And that's exciting to me, because and then she told her mother, and then her mother started the diet a couple of weeks ago, and she's already lost 7 pounds.
What?
Yes.
Wow.
It's like all these ripple effects, like all these people they're already starting before. And then I have another one who also does marathons, but she eats everything. She's really skinny, but she eats meat, she eats dairy, she eats everything. So she's interested to find out what this is all about. And then I have another one who is kind of middle of the road. She started being plant-based, and she's convinced her husband, and her father started, and he lost like 50 pounds.
Holy cow.
So it's, you know, it's really a grassroots thing that's spreading. I see it just so locally. So anyway, so we start on Monday. And so what I want to hear from you, maybe you can help me, you know, I'm trying to condense all of this information into an hour. And what do you think are some of the key things that would help people, you know, not overwhelming them, because I don't want to overwhelm them, but what do you think are some of the key points you think that would be helpful? Because you do this all the time, and I've never done this before with a group of people.
One thing I have found, and it helps that a lot of the people you're talking to are going to have a solid understanding of like science and nutrition, but I try not to make it too much of like a school lecture with all the science. And I kind of just give them a little sampling, like a little spoonful taste, and then give them a piece of paper with maybe some websites or books if they want to read more. That way you're not just like droning on, and they can kind of pick and choose what issues are really attractive to them. So for example, you were really interested in all of the data of the various different scientific studies, but like a friend of mine, you know, she really is very environmental. And so she would have wanted to hear about all of the ecological consequences. Whereas, you know, my mom, she would have tuned right out of that, but weight loss, she would have loved to hear about that. But my ecological friend is so skinny, she wouldn't care. So I like to kind of say, here are the top 20 benefits, and then give them a little, you know, brief thing, and then give them the opportunity to go learn more on their own. And plus, then they're doing it in their own way, and you're not lecturing. I'm a big fan of planting the seed and then watering it, not trying to like force grow it.
Yeah, I agree. That's good.
So I really like that approach too. And I also like to do some like really dramatic things, like showing them really shocking proof. So Dr. Esselstyn, for example, has this really great chart, and they did it in Forks Over Knives, where they showed what happened when the Nazis invaded and took away all the animal products, and how all the heart rates of heart attacks and strokes just like plummeted, and nothing else in the history of the world, not the invention of statins, nothing could quite do it as much as just, you know, someone coming in and taking all the animal products away. And, you know, just to really kind of like, oh, wow, you know, just make it kind of interesting, but mostly just, you know, begin it, get it in, and say, hey, it's really simple. Just eat plants. Just kind of say that over and over and over. No, it's not complicated. Just eat plants. Nope. Just eat plants. Plants. And eat more potatoes. God, I wish somebody would have told me to eat more potatoes.
Oh my gosh. That's like,
it's the answer to every question. Eat more potatoes.
The answer to just eat a potato. And then people go, you can eat potatoes? I said, of course you can eat potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
They're a vegetable. What? I never thought, I said, well, you just can't eat them with, you know, your bacon. And,
and it's not cheese. The potato that's the problem. Unfortunately, the potato just hangs out with the wrong crowd.
That's right. But you can introduce it to the right crowd.
Yeah, you can totally save him from his bad friends. It's the boyfriend that you always wanted to change and were unsuccessful.
There you go.
This is the one.
I love potatoes. They're my friend.
I know. They're so good. I actually had like 3 potatoes for lunch and my friend was over and she's just like, are you really just eating potatoes? I'm like, I know it sounds weird, but I just really wanted potatoes today.
I know. I ate potatoes too. I had sweet potatoes. I went out in my garden. I have a bunch of greens. I cut a whole bunch of greens. I threw the potatoes on top of it. The sweet potatoes and chickpeas. And then I made a raisin citrus dressing.
Mm. Wait, why are we doing this podcast at your house?
I don't know. It was so good. I thought this is so ridiculously easy. You know, it doesn't sound good. I'm sure to the regular person that's like,
well, to me, it sounds delicious,
but it was so yummy and I didn't want to let it go. So keep it simple. Think of like the top benefits that they can get out of it and try to be more versatile. So I meet everybody's needs.
You know, and since you have 2 runners, I would definitely bring up at least briefly some of the really amazing plant-based athletes, especially like Scott Jurek, ultra runner, and offer to give them some information about those people. And 2, you might even want to slip in all of the plethora of coverage plant-based and vegan athletes have been getting in terms of like runners magazines, because they're finding people recover faster and they're performing better when they eat plant-based. And of course we all know why. They're not slowing their bodies down. Their systems aren't trying to just dust this stuff that's rotting in there. Mm-hmm. But that might be really intriguing to them.
Oh, that's a good idea. That's a good idea.
So yeah, I know when I speak at conferences, I'm pretty much speaking to people who have health issues and want to lose weight. And so it's easy for me to kind of narrow in. But even among that crowd, I still find that there's just different motivations. Like my uncle's a hunter, so I could never talk about animal welfare. He'll just tune me right out. But if he could have, you know, a poop and not be constipated, he'll listen all day. I mean, sometimes you have to know your listener.
You do have to know your audience, don't you?
Yeah.
Is poop important to you? Or
you know what? That is like the one thing that I feel I get so many emails about. I'm like, just apparently this is my life. The poop emoji on my phone is used frequently.
Oh my gosh. That's so funny. Because it's funny because I just at a doctor's appointment with my daughter and she was telling me how, and she's not plant-based and she probably thinks I'm a little crazy. But she was telling me how she gets patients in there that haven't pooped for 2 weeks. And I said, how could that be? She's like, I don't understand. She goes, I don't know. They're carrying probably, you know, 15 extra pounds of food that hasn't gone to them.
I can't even imagine that. God, you'd be so uncomfortable.
I wouldn't be able to move.
I would just be so uncomfortable. I remember, speaking of that, since we're on the poop topic now, I remember right after I wasn't even vegan. I was just vegetarian. And I went to one of those like vegetarian fests, which are growing in popularity at all these cities and towns. Sadly, there's almost never anything healthy being offered, but whatever, you know, progress, not perfection. But I went to one. I was really excited to go to this veg fest. And I saw this shirt and it said, I'm vegan. I poop 4 times a day. And I was like super mortified, but now I just think it's funny.
I think that is awesome. That's the one thing I love about this diet. I never have to worry about my bowel regularity.
When you were like me, you had a lot of stomach issues and indigestion problems before.
Yes, I did.
And so they're gone then.
Yeah, I don't have them anymore. I don't have them anymore. My stomach just, there's certain things like wheat, some wheat things bother, I notice that they bother me if I eat them, but not all the time. Like my stomach will start to burn and I don't know why, but I just stay away from that then. I don't have to answer every question, but oh my gosh. I mean, it used to be like every night I'd have indigestion and be uncomfortable. And I don't eat that much to begin with, but anything that I ate cheese, Cheese. Mm. Oh my gosh. I thought I was never going to be able to give up cheese, but.
I hear that a lot. You know, it's either oil or it's cheese. It's people that's in the forums, in the group, and on this podcast, everyone is either like, I never thought I'd be able to live without cheese, or I'd never be able to. It's about a 50-50. I used to keep a tally of which one was like the harder, but I think it's slightly leaning towards oil. Now, yeah, but people who are cheese fanatics, and we know why. It's because it's actually physically addicting like a drug. Yeah. So, you're not alone if it's very hard or a scary concept for you, but my husband was a cheese addict, so I went through that with him. I'm lactose intolerant, so I never really developed a taste for it. I guess I'm very lucky in that way.
That's good. And that's probably your body was naturally telling you, hey, don't put this in here.
It was funny when I was a kid, I don't, you know, it's so hard to understand what's happening when you're small, but I think what it was is I would rip cheese off pizza. I would never want it on things. My mom thought I was so strange because all the other kids liked it. I didn't want grilled cheese, but I think I knew it upset my stomach. Maybe I didn't put it together because you just don't have that kind of higher, deeper thinking when you're seven, mm-hmm. but, I just never wanted to eat it. And then I just never got in the habit of eating it. And I had developed this self-identity that I don't like it. And then when I was older, I decided to try it because everyone's like, oh, it's so good. You like it. You like it. And then I realized I was lactose intolerant. Like, this was just never, no, it just does not sit with me. But I think it was from an early age. I just was intuitive, but couldn't understand my intuition.
I think that happens in a lot of kids that they just don't like certain things. And actually it turns out to be like some kids just hate milk.
Mm-hmm. My sister hated it. She wouldn't drink it. She thought it was gross. Didn't like the flavor. Didn't like the way it made her mouth feel.
See? You guys have highly evolved genes.
And my parents just were like, how did we get the two weirdos? This one doesn't drink milk. This one won't eat cheese. Like,
that's great. I mean, that really is. That's half the battle right there.
And my sister and I are adopted, so they couldn't even think that it was like some weird...
Oh, so it's not even genetic.
Yeah, I know. It was just like, I think we were just lucky.
Instinctual,
yeah. Yeah, and my sister's actually, it's funny, when we were talking about when you are whatever it eats, that's how I even learned that was from her is she got diagnosed with a cottonseed allergy, which is pretty easy to avoid. It's like in some peanut butters and icings and chips, but take those things out and you're not really exposed to cottonseed oil unless you laundry detergent, but this is ingesting, not topical.
Yeah.
And, but she was still so sick all the time she couldn't breathe. It caused like a phlegm kind of situation. Couldn't figure it out. Comes to live with me, stay with me for a while in New York City where I'm living, a little longer than a week. And, by the time she left, she could breathe. She wasn't having allergic reactions anymore. Mm-hmm. And she thought it was, you know, the extremely clean air of New York City. And so she was going to move there. And I said, you know, maybe it was that you were eating vegan for the whole, you know, 10 days or whatever you were here. And she was like, no, of course not. But sure enough, she went home to Florida and it resumed. But then she said, all right, I'll give it a try. And sure enough, within 2 weeks, she was cleared and she's never had an issue ever again. And what we found out was that all animals are fed cottonseed oil in the livestock feed.
No kidding.
But when you buy eggs or milk or cheese or a filet or hamburger, it doesn't say contains...
Cottonseed oil.
What it says is it contains beef, not beef. And by the way, the cow's history is the following.
Maybe they should be adding that to you.
Right, like, yeah. And it's like she never would have known. And the same thing happened with a friend of mine, horribly allergic to soy. And so she's like, of course she can never be vegan or vegetarian. And I'm like, you really don't have to have soy. You don't have to, I don't know why people think you have to have soy and be vegetarian. No. This is not true. But anyway, she... basically was trying to do paleo to avoid the soy because the paleos hate soy, but she was just getting sicker and sicker and sicker. And what we subsequently found out is that most animals are fed soy.
Oh my goodness.
And when she basically became a soy-free vegan, all her problems went away.
Wow.
Because well, like you said, stories. It's you're eating the history of that animal.
Wow. I know. I never really thought of it. And really, I mean, the labeling, I mean, wow, that's right? Just... Mm-hmm.
I thought you'd appreciate that.
You're right. Patricia. Write it down because I love that.
Yeah, right. Take it. There you go. There's something for your slide.
Yeah, that's cool.
You can use my sister's story. She's used to it.
I love that story.
Yeah. But no, and she's, it's, I guess, almost 7 years now. And so it's amazing to think of what her life used to be like. She couldn't even walk to the mailbox without being out of breath because she was so congested, woke herself up all night long because she would stop breathing from all of the congestion. And it's like, I can't believe she ever lived that way, and she thought she'd have to forever.
Oh my God. So what age was she when she finally switched?
We were probably about 27 or 28.
Wow. So she had lived all that time.
Mm-hmm. And like she couldn't, and it had gotten progressively worse. Like it used to be, she just always kind of sounded like she had the sniffles. Like she always kind of had a cold. Mm-hmm. And then it just kept continuing to get worse and worse and worse. And then finally, she was so stuffed up, and she would, like I said, she was waking up at night. So she wasn't even sleeping well. And I'm, as you can attest, I'm sure, like not sleeping, just, you just keep making it worse on yourself because your body can't do any of the things it needs to do. Mm-hmm. And then finally, she called the doctor because she was not breathing. She was constantly stopping breathing. And the doctor's receptionist thought she was sick. Like, how long have you had this virus, cold, flu, et cetera? And she's like, I'm not sick. I don't have a temperature. I don't feel bad. I just can't breathe. So they passed her on straight to a specialist. And I guess there's some kind of special tool that they use to stick up inside your nasal passages. Apparently, hers were so swollen shut that there was no getting this teeny tiny wire in it.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, I mean, it was, they were like, we're going to have to do surgery. And I'm like, you're going to cut my sister's face open? I mean, she was young. She was just out of college.
Wow.
But fortunately, it worked out. She went plant-based, and her problem has since resolved.
Good for her.
But yeah, and even she was on outside allergy medication for a really long time and was like, I'm going to have to move. She's allergic to this certain kind of grass that grows all over Florida. And like, what was the option? Quit her job and move to Arizona where she has no job and no friends, which I love Arizona. But I mean, she doesn't want to quit her job, sell her house and leave her friends. But she just started taking she started meeting up with a local beekeeper who would give her like a small amount of honey, and just having that once a month, I guess, gave her the antibodies to not be allergic to the grass anymore.
Oh my, you know, there's so many stories like that. Mm-hmm. Those are like, you don't get that with any other diet.
No.
Or any other way of living. It's one after the other, after the other, after the other. Things like your sister, how it's related to your diet. And now you're eating a healthy diet and you're 100% better. You're cured of whatever it was that was making you miserable. So that's what it always blows my mind, why everybody just doesn't jump on this. Well, I guess because Twinkies and
and I mean, we loved our junk food, but it's just shocking. And I mean, the amount of money that she was spending on medications and shots, to account for all the inconvenience of constantly having to go pick up these medications or go to the doctor's office to get these shots. And then she spent thousands of dollars on all of this different allergy testing. And it turns out like she just needed to eat vegetables.
Wow. You know, I mean, you know, we talk about, I know I've heard you talk about it, about the medical community and how they're not trained in nutrition. They have, you know, 5 hours or whatever it is worth of nutrition training. Most of their work is based on what are your symptoms and what drug is out there available that I can prescribe to you to get rid of those symptoms, but never the cause. Mm-hmm. It never seems like the medical community is addressing the causes of things. And very rarely do they ever recommend, you know, that you change your diet.
Mm-hmm.
One of the people that are on that, in that jumpstart that I'm starting on Monday, she said to me that, well, she had her gallbladder removed last year. Nobody ever said to her, she's overweight. Nobody ever said to her, maybe you should lose some weight. Maybe you should change your diet.
Terrible. No,
she said in all the years that she's been going to the doctor and she's been having all kinds of issues, nobody has ever said to her, maybe you should change your diet. They just give her medicines.
That's
and
terrible.
Tell her, you have to live with this. That's the way it is. So.
Oh, anyway, that breaks my heart.
We got to change the world.
We are one person at a time. You're starting with your 5 on Monday.
And you're starting with your however many million.
The members. And you guys all then spread all out to other people. And it's amazing to see how much we've grown. And like you said, it's very grassroots. And that's like, I hope the members who are listening might be a little inspired to maybe do a little something, something in their office, because I really do think eating by example is the way to go.
It is. It is. I think people just watch. You don't have to lecture to people. You just, you know, your behavior says, your actions speak louder than words, right?
Absolutely. And that was, reminds me of the best advice someone ever gave me and was like, don't argue your lifestyle. If the results will speak for themselves, you'll be happy and healthy and everyone will want in on it. And you don't even have to open your mouth because you'll just be radiating.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. I like that.
Well, it has just been awesome talking with you, Patricia. And I'm so excited to hear about this Jumpstart program and see how it all unfolds. And I know everyone who's listening is also really curious and we're all dying to know. So I'm going to have you back next week. So if you're listening now and you want to hear how the Jumpstart program goes, make sure to tune in again next week because Patricia will be here with us again on the next episode, filling us in, telling us how it went. I'm sure it's going to be fabulous.
I will.
We all can't wait to hear. So tune in again next week. And if you want to learn more in the meantime, visit getmealplans.com. I'm your host, Lindsay S. Nixon. A big thanks to my co-pilot, Patricia, and we'll talk again soon.